For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Get by Benning. Darnell Nurse left it in the corner. Gets up center. Perry scoops. Corey Perry.
Well, you're able to shake away from Solani. It's given away to Solani around the front. Score! Teemu Solani with the steal.
Bring in the fans. Score one. Score! Off the floor. On the board. Paul Kariya.
All right, we're back. It's been a while, man. It's been a while since I've been able to say that. But this is not our longest run, though. We've been away for a month. I thought it was longer. November 22nd was the last episode.
Wow, that's 16?
Ahoy, you want to run? You can run the dad joke and say, we haven't recorded for a year.
Yeah, we haven't recorded all year. There you go. That's right. I can't believe I let that one walk right past me.
That one would hit a little bit better if we recorded a little bit sooner, end of December rather than back in November. But yeah, man, we've been busy, a lot of life shit going on, but we've been trying to get back every now and then. And funny enough, we were supposed to get back sooner than this, but I don't know if it was a sign or whatever, but my laptop died, just completely died, crashed. So if you're listening to this, you're only likely listening to the audio version of this. So if you're wondering why there's no YouTube video version, that would be why. Because everything that we use to stream the podcast, to have the nice little video setup we have, that's all on that laptop. And it will not work right now. So we're kicking it at bare bones today, recording audio in Microsoft Teams, because that's the option we have.
Yeah, because that's how much we care about you guys. Is we are just taking our yeoman 200-foot pucks on net game and just like, you know what, we're just gonna record a podcast, we're just gonna try to give it a good 60 minutes and get some shots on net and grind them down and try to limit chances against, and here we are, and we'll see what happens. But shout out to Microsoft Teams for finally being useful for once. I appreciate them for that very much.
And in the last little stretch, I think we the last show we had, the Ducks were better. The record looked a little bit better. They would have been what, 9-10? It's been that long. They would have been 9-10 the last time we were on here. They're now 13-23. So actually no overtime losses. We were talking about this before the show. I couldn't see if there was any OT or shootout losses because they had gone 4-13 since we last recorded a show. Straight no OT losses, no shootout losses, all regulation.
I think they've only been in one shootout and they won.
Yeah, and a few overtime wins this show.
Yeah,
right?
By and large, everything that's been going on has been going on in fucking regulation, which personally for me is great. Because we talk about this all the time, man. I hate the fucking loser point. It's so stupid. Yeah. I don't want the 3-2. I do not personally like the PWHL system. I get that a lot of people, even before it was the PWHL system, were talking about how much they like the idea of the 3-2-1-0 system. I think it's stupid and complicated. I think you either win, you lose, or there's a tie, and that's fine. I think we've talked about this before. I would love to go to a Premier League system where it's 3-1-win, 1-0, 0-0. Yep. That, to me, would rock. Give me 7 minutes, 5 minutes, 3-on-3, whatever they think it is that gets us where we need to be, and then just let it be. I think I've said this 100 times. I grew up with ties. It never bothered me that there were ties. Like that tying a game.
I don't even care if it goes to overtime and there's a tie after overtime.
No,
like, I'm fine with that.
That's okay. It's totally fine. It there's no reason to overcomplicate the standings process. I simply don't understand the obsession with making the process more ridiculous. I get the balance and the reward part of it, but it's also just like, I don't know. I don't think we need to be like, okay, well, if you win in this much time, you get this many points. And if you win in this much time, you get I don't care, man. I think
if anything,
you win or you lose.
A 3-1-0 system like that, 3 wins, 0 for a loss, 1 for a tie. I think that makes close games that much more exciting because, you know, you're not holding on for overtime to get a point. Like you are gunning for it to win. If you're, if it's a one goal game and a team's leading, like you're pouring everything on. Like obviously you do that now, but there's more of an incentive because you don't get anything, right, for a loss. And there's such a massive gap. Like right now, it's in overtime, it's 2-1. So like you're, you know, not a massive gap between winning and losing. It's a 1 point difference. Well, now it's 3 wins or 3 points, right. You get nothing. Like 3-0 is a huge point gap, especially late in playoff races. You get a teams that are on the outside looking in, facing each other. Like that's a huge gap to be able to make up, and it's going to make those games more exciting. And then yeah, if it ends in a tie, it ends in a tie. Like after you know, even 10 minutes overtime, you know, full 60-minute game, 10 minutes overtime is still tied. Okay, you both walk away with a point. You both gave it your best effort. It is what it is. Like I have 100%. no problems with that. I don't think you need to go to a shootout just to have a winner. And I know it's the, you know, the North American way, and you have to kind of have with North American sports, you got to have a winner. Somebody has to win. You can't walk away with a tie. But it's not necessarily the case. And obviously, we know in football, rarely you can have a tie. And obviously, in soccer, they adopted just, you know, the European soccer system, but you do have ties in that. But I don't see it being a problem. I think if any sport could add it and make it work, I think hockey would be fine. I don't see why not. I don't think you'd get too many, honestly.
Also, here's the other question I have, and this might be a silly question. Why do we even do fucking standings points? Why isn't it just record?
Yeah, wins. Yeah, no, I get it.
Well, it just wins.
Yeah.
And then if there's a tie, you do regulation wins. Like, what do we need the standings points for? Like, can somebody actually answer that for me? Like, what value, other than getting to see your team hit 100 points,
does is this the only points? This is the only league that does standings points, right? Am I just like NBA doesn't do standings points? Right?
NBA doesn't. MLB doesn't. NBA doesn't. Football NFL doesn't. Doesn't. Premier League does. Like we were saying, they do the 3 and the 1.
Yeah. Yeah.
But like, I don't
I'm just thinking of a major North American sports. Hockey's the only one that has standings points.
Why do you need standings points? Like, what is the point? Like, I guess that's my question is, like, what is the actual functionality of it beyond being able to look at the numbers? Like,
I've honestly never thought about it. I've never put that together that they're the only league that has standings points. It's just.
It's just stupid. I don't understand what the point is. But yeah, so I don't know, man. It's very silly. As a timestamp for anybody, the Ducks in Toronto just went into the second intermission. The Ducks are currently winning 1-0. And Pavel Minchikov was apparently the victim of a vicious attack by Bobby McMahon, who's a fake player, by the way. That's not a real person.
I've never heard of it. That's like the Penguins every year. Not so much recently, but they'd always have this one guy that they pulled from like the depths of college hockey, like Bobby Zahora or something.
Yeah.
And every year they have one of those guys.
Bobby McMahon is just such a fucking, like, guys and dolls ass fake name, like a ball player who played on like the Cincinnati Rockies or some stupid shit in like the 30s. Bobby McMahon went 3-for-4 today with a single and 2 doubles. And you're just like, fucking what?
He's probably just ruined his chance of getting another game in this year with that, like 5 in a game.
Yeah, I mean,
he's not going to get suspended. Like, I don't think it was
that bad. We talked about this before. If he gets suspended, that's fucking ridiculous. Like, I don't think it was major. I don't know like, he went shoulder to shoulder with Minchikov. Minchikov was in a vulnerable position because he went to make a play on the puck. Like, he shot the puck into the zone, and he caught himself a little bit, you know, off balance. McMahon finishes his check. It's an incredibly unfortunate result, right?
Yeah.
Like, let's not equivocate on that. Like, he flew cheekbone first into the dasher. Like, it's not good, but I don't think anybody did anything wrong. And I think this is one of those things for me that it's just like, yo, like, sometimes bad things just happen and people aren't at fault for it. Like, not everything that every time something happens, every time something bad happens, somebody's has to be held accountable for it. And this is one of those times to me where I'm just like, fucking for what? Like, what are we doing? I don't know. Like, I don't know, dude. It's how I feel about that Connor Geeky hit that got him kicked out of the game for the World Juniors.
Yeah.
He's just fucking bigger. Like, I don't know what he's supposed to do. His feet were on the ground. His elbows were down. Like, he just went through the kids. Like, I don't know. And I get that the IIHF rules are any head contact is bad automatically. And, like, fine. But I don't know what he's supposed to do. Like, hitting is legal. Why wouldn't you hit it? Like, I don't.
It just looks bad. Minchkov's off balance. He is a little bit of a push off in the check because he's off balance, and then the first place for him to land is face first into the boards. So it looks bad. And like I was gonna say, you know, if you, I'm fine if they wanted to give him a two, and just say it looked bad, so you give him a two. But at that point, like it's either a bad hit or it's not. It's either a penalty or it's not. I don't think it should have been a penalty. I think it looks bad just the way it went off. But I don't think you should give anything for that. Like for. And you know, maybe the ref seeing it in real time differently, and I can understand how it would look.
Well, they reviewed it. That's the thing. They called it as a major, and then they went back and watched it. And
yeah, that's a problem. Then
I'm fascinated by it. I really am fascinated by it because, like, I don't, you know, and they gave Lubushkin the instigator penalty.
No, fair. Yeah.
Fine.
Yeah.
That's you know, it's actually really funny. I was listening to Puck Soup from. I think it was the mailbag from the week between Christmas and New Year's. And they were talking about the instigator penalty and why don't they give it out more? And Magny was just like, just give it out. Like, that's what it's for. Like, if you start a fight with a guy, that's what it's for. Like, you know, and it's just funny that this is the game in which it becomes a thing. It's them versus the Ducks. But like, yeah, man, I don't know. I don't think Bobby McMahon did anything wrong. And I think, you know, again, like, if he's shorter, he probably doesn't fly into the boards like that. Like, are we now punishing McMahon because Minchikov is 6'2"? You know what I mean? Like if he's 5'10", he doesn't hit it.
Yep.
It's a completely different end result. Like, I don't know, man. It's just, it's a weird thing. But there's so much to talk about.
They're bad.
Yeah, the Ducks are bad.
They're bad again. But not as bad as last year. We said, is it? I mentioned this to you before we recorded too. So they're ranked 24th in goals per game and goals against per game. Power play is 17th and penalty kill 16th. So it's no longer like last year where everything was 30th, 31st, 32nd. There's 13 and 23. So record wise, they're not much better. But there's improvement there, right? Like the play, you know, obviously there was what? The 6-game winning streak that they went on for the run they went on early in the season. Was it 6? Feels like it was forever ago. Or was it longer than 6?
What?
The winning streak the Ducks went on early in the season.
It was six.
6-game winning streak October into November. But they have looked better. Obviously, there's some games where rookies have looked like rookies and things have regressed and we've had injuries and whatnot. But they do look better. We just are getting very close finally to being fully healthy. Zegras is back. Drysdale's back. Mitavish is
Lundestrom
in the lineup.
Lundestrom came back tonight.
Lundestrom's back in. Gudas was back in. I got notification. I think he went out again tonight. He wasn't in there.
Yeah, him and Ross Johnston are sick.
Okay.
And then Ryan Strom had an injury that I think he's like day-to-day or something.
But that would be everybody back then now, right?
Troy Terry is on IR.
Troy Terry's on IR now. Okay.
So it's those four were the ones who were out. Johnston and Gudas were sick. Strom, I think, is day-to-day, it said, and then Terry is on IR. Mm-hmm. But, you know, again, Lundestrom is back, McGinn is back. Like, this team is closer to healthy than it's been in a long time.
Mm-hmm. And Trevor Zegras pulled off another Michigan on his his return to the lineup. That was the nastiest one I think we've seen, too, the way he picked that puck off the
edge. Yeah, we talked about this a little bit, man, and, like, I know that we're biased, but I don't care. His Michigans are the prettiest. He does them so smoothly and at such a high speed that, like, he just does them the best. Like, again, it doesn't matter. Like, all that matters in the end is if it goes in or not. You don't get, like, an extra goal, like, just because it looks pretty. Yeah. But, boy, is it nice to just see how effortless he is with that. Like, it's insane how well he is at picking those pucks up off the ice that quickly.
He swung that into the top corner too. It was fast.
Dude, so nasty.
And it wasn't the typical pickup where, you know, you kind of put the face of your stick down on it and like press down and lift it up, right? He scooped it up from underneath it and then came with full speed behind the net and just slung it into the top corner. On the same night, Connor Bedard did it too. And, you know, again, bias for sure, but just a lot prettier. Connor Bedard's was nice too. You got to give him some credit for doing that as well.
Oh, look, you pull off a Michigan goal. It's a beaut. Like, yeah. You know, but it's just, again, there's a fluidity to the way Zegras does it that I just think is special. And not even special, just like pleasing to watch. Like, it's just nice to see him do it that way. Like, it's just a little bit more enjoyable. And, you know, he plays for us, obviously. Us, whatever. He plays for the Ducks. So, like, again, I'm biased. But, like, I just think it's kind of unequivocal to me. Like, he's just the best at it. You know, I mean, we were talking about it before. Like, hey, it's been 6 weeks. What do you want to talk about? And we're like, oh, we'll just bullshit our way through. Like, I was watching some of the game tonight. And, like, Jamie Drysdale, man.
Mm-hmm.
He looked good. He seems so decisive with the puck on his stick. He just seems more aggressive and direct. Like, he's ending up behind the net a lot, like in the offensive zone. Like, he's physical in his own end. Like, he just seems like he could not wait. And obviously, you know, he played, what, 6 games last year, and he played 2 games at the beginning of this year before getting hurt again.
Yeah.
I can't imagine how, you know, just like pent up he is to be able to play again. But it just to see him really just show the kind of growth that you hope to see even without getting the games in is really exciting. And I think one of the more encouraging points that we have seen in this season is just how he's looked.
Yeah, it'd be nice to see after 20 games how that's progressed, because obviously he's missed so much time. It'll be interesting to see as he gets more comfortable, more ice time, more games, better fitness, how he's going to look in, you know, the next 15, 20 games from now. So it's great. It's been encouraging to see him come back. I think he scored in his return as well, right? I think.
I don't know.
He scored early into coming back. He's been back for 5 games over the last stretch here since we've missed it. We missed the last 17. Is one goal in those 5 games. Looking at this too, I just realized, how are we missing this one guy being injured right now? Leo Carlson is out.
Oh, Jesus, look at us.
I know there was probably hackery. A few people screaming
at us.
Leo
yeah,
Carlson over that last stretch had 6 points in 10 games as well. And he had the last show we did was we covered the hat trick. That was the very last show that we had done. Troy Terry performed well over the last stretch, 10 points in 16 games. Alex Killorn is actually the point leader since we've been away with 11 points in 17 games.
He's an interesting one to me. I was thinking about him the other day and just kind of like watching a couple of little plays he made, I think, in the Edmonton game.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing that stuck out to me, and it's so interesting, because I think it's really interesting that his game seems to be more effective as has gone on. And the reason, like, that, sorry, obviously as he gets more comfortable with his line mates, as he gets more comfortable in the team, getting his feet under him, playing with this team, body, yada, yada, like, he's going to improve. It's going to show.
Yeah,
he's a veteran, like, he's a quality player, all that stuff. But the thing that I think is the most interesting to me is his game hasn't fundamentally changed, right? Like, he's not really doing things differently from a functionality standpoint. It's more just about him being able to know where his line mates and teammates are going to be, so where he can use what he's good at more effectively. Yeah. Like, I've noticed on the half wall, he is great with keeping the pucks, either, you know, stopping a puck, like stopping a clearance, and then just kind of making plays in tight, in the corners, behind the net, on the half walls, and creating second and third opportunities when it looks like it's going to be heading the other way. He makes a lot of really good, forechecking decisions. He's physical. He's getting pucks off guys' sticks on the back check. And it's just been interesting because I think early on when he came back, because obviously he missed time injured, you could see all of the little things that he does, but he looked a little slow. He looked a little rusty, and that's obviously like normal, but it was just so interesting because you could see all the stuff he was doing, and you're like, that's all the stuff you want him to do. Like, he's not doing things, right? Going to the front of the net, winning battles, being aggressive on the forecheck. He's doing all the things you want to do. It just wasn't necessarily having the effect. And as he's continued to get more time with his line mates and kind of settle in, he just seems to be getting better and better. Like, he had a really nice little tonight, like a little one touch play to on a zone entry. And it's just nice to see him really finding his footing with this team and, you know, seeing exactly what it is about his game, obviously, that Pat Verbeek was willing to give him the money and the term that he gave him.
Yeah. No, it's nice to see him get in and kind of find his feet, like you said. And when, you know, once everybody's back, everybody's going, it'll be nice to have him as that kind of complimentary secondary scoring piece where it's not all on Terry, it's not all on Carlson or Zegras to get things going. And I don't think we've had a time or many games this year where all of them have been in a lineup where you've had Terry and McTavish, Zegras, Strome, Killorn, all these guys, Carlson, in the lineup. So hopefully sooner rather than later, we get them all in and we can kind of finally see how this team's going to look at full strength. Okay, one thing before we move on, so Killorn is first over the last 17 games, 11 points in 17 games. Henrique's right after with 10 in 17 games. Then it's Terry with 10 in 16. I want to see if you could guess who is at number four with 8 points, 4 goals in 15 games. It's LA. It's not a common name. It's not one of the guys you would normally expect.
Is it Leeson?
It's Brett Leeson.
Bro, he's been so nice on this team.
Yeah, 4 goals, 3 primary assists, 1 secondary assist, 8 points over his last 15 games. Not bad.
He is... I don't think I want to say this. He is, to me, a guy that he reminds me of the Barkley Gaudreaus and the Blake Colemans.
Yeah.
I don't think he's quite Brandon Hagel. I don't think he has quite that offensive ability, but he's smart. He works really hard and he's shown an ability to finish around the net. And he is the type of guy that it'll be very interesting to me. Even if he doesn't get moved, right, just to hear after the deadline or even leading up to the deadline, if he's a guy people are calling about because he's young, the Ducks got him on waivers, like there's everything to gain and nothing to lose from keeping him and from trading him.
Yep.
And he's just such an interesting player to me because of, again, they picked him up on waivers. He was kind of in and out of the lineup a little bit last year. He was fine. And towards the end of last year and then just this year, he's just taken a big step. And he just looks like a modern fourth line bottom six winger. You know, I think tonight he's playing with Lundestrom and McGinn. And like, yeah, that's the lineup I want. Like, that's a great line to me. Mm-hmm. You know, three guys who are going to play the right way, be able to do some things with the puck on their stick and have enough size and speed to be able to handle other teams, right? Like, I don't think you're going to send them out there to be your checking line or anything like that. But they're a team you can certainly trust out there if they get caught out there against another line to at least play well, right? You're not going to be all that excited about the talent matchup, right? Like if that line gets caught out there against like Matthews or McKinnon or McDavid or whatever, you're like, yeah, that's obviously a disadvantage for the Ducks. But this isn't a team or that isn't a group of players. And I think Leeson really exemplifies this, that you're nervous about. Where in the past, there has been third and fourth lines for the Ducks where you do get nervous about them being out there for longer than 15 or 20 seconds against other teams' top six. And, you know, again, he's the guy that I could absolutely see teams in the hunt calling about to add for bottom depth. I think he's an RFA at the end of this year. He's not going to be expensive. You know, there's just absolutely nothing about him that is going to require him to make $4 million next year. But listen, yeah, he makes $775,000. He's an RFA with arbitration rights. Like, he's not even a $2 million player next year. Like, I just, it's just awesome, man. It's just really, really awesome.
Yeah, I mean, you can't complain. Like, one guy I was thinking, like, kind of reminds me a bit of when Ryan Hartman started to get going for Minnesota, that type of player who plays a physical kind of game. You know, not every game does he chip in offensively, but he can plug holes in the lineup. And then when he does play up in the lineup, he has enough hockey sense and skill to contribute and play well. And that's what we've seen from him over the last stretch here, which is nice. I mean, we get every year, I think we get a couple of these guys who impress and step forward, but it's kind of nice when it's a guy you picked up off waivers, right? And you didn't expect too much from him. We've talked about, I think, early on in our early season predictions and whether he'd be in the lineup or not. And then to have a run of games here where you've got 8 points in the last 15 games here, fourth on the team in scoring. It's impressive. It's impressive. It's nice to see from him, and especially when we've had injuries and guys not stepping up. You need other guys from in the bottom of the lineup to step up and produce. And obviously the Ducks haven't won a ton of the games over the last stretch here. But things are a lot worse if you don't have these guys stepping up and performing. So it's awesome. It's awesome to see a guy like that get going and have some success.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think you hit it perfectly on the head, which is even just to be a successful team. So Anaheim is 3-2 in games that he has a goal, and 1-3 in games in which he has an assist. So they are 5-4 in games that he scores in. So they have a winning, but anyways, that's what I was trying to say is you over the course of the season, if you're going to win games, you're going to need guys to pitch in. We always talk about depth scoring and it's huge. It's also especially helpful to have those guys pitch in when your team isn't good, because it helps kind of keep, you know, morale up a little bit. It helps it not feel so bad, because when you are getting, you know, points and production from the bottom of your lineup, you know, again, it's like Radko Gudas turning into Erik Karlsson. Found money, and it's so valuable over the course of an 82 game season to just be able to find money in the seat cushions. It's just huge. And again, like, you know, I don't think Leason is anywhere near as like physical as Ryan Hartman is.
Yeah.
But if he can even just be generic third line level, you know, 10 goals, 12 goals, you know, maybe 40 points over the course of a year, like, you're fucking ecstatic. Like, if he gets anywhere near 35, 40 points, that's absurd luck for Anaheim.
No, yeah. I mean, you're happy with, like, you know, 20, 25 and say, listen, that's a great year from you. You get anywhere near 30 or 40 from a guy you picked him off waivers. That's wild. There's a game back on now.
Yeah.
Just start. Well, we might as well talk about this guy because he's standing on his head tonight. What do you thought about Lucas Dostal so far this year?
He's been really interesting to me because he hasn't had great 5-on-5 numbers, but he's been strong on the penalty kill. Mm-hmm. And I've just been really interested by the fact that, like, it's just very interesting to me that he has struggled at 5-on-5 and done well on the penalty kill. Let's see if I can bring up Evolve Hockey.
It's kind of similar to his season last year. Is like, more often than not, he's average to above average. Then he just has a couple of these games, man, where, like, it just – the numbers get tanked. He led an 8 against Colorado. He led 5 against Philly, 6 against Edmonton. Those were 3 starts in a row, or, like, for him. He had Philly November 10th, Colorado November 15th, and then Edmonton November 26th. That just really, really hurt his numbers. But since then, he's been pretty strong. you know, a loss in a tough game where you stopped 24-25 against Chicago, a win against Detroit, a good performance against Calgary and a loss. And then obviously tonight right now, he's got 36 saves bidding for the shutout right now against the Leafs. It's been on and off. It's what I guess you expect from a rookie goaltender. But I think he, more often than not, he comes out and puts in a pretty strong performance.
So here's what's fucking awesome.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Okay. In shorthanded save percentage, he is 17th in the league. 16th is John Gibson. They are separated by 0.05%.
Okay.
So Dostal is 89.07, Gibson is 89.12, and Elvis Merzlikins is apparently the best save percentage in the league at 93.44. And then it's okay. Markstrom, Talbot, Aiden Hill, Jonathan Quick, Swayman, Ottinger, sure, Copley, whatever. Here's the thing that I think is interesting. When you switch to goal save above expected, Dostal jumps up to 9 and Gibby jumps up to 7. So, like, just again, just like with when they're shorthanded, the Ducks have done a perfectly good job of, or let me say it this way, Ducks goaltending has done a perfectly good job of trying to keep this team in it. If you switch to, let's see, even strength, that's what I want. Save percentage. Lucas Dostal is not in the top 50 at all. And John Gibson is 44th.
Yeah, so you can kind of easily see, yeah.
Excuse me. And when you switch to goals saved above expected, John Gibson moves up to 24th. And Dostal is not anywhere in it. So, yeah, at even strength, Gibson's been fine.
It could be the games that they're getting as well. Dostal getting primarily the back-to-backs. That it's tough to come into those games with a tired team. Like, he had a run here where I think Gibby was sick or out. He had 3 in a row. Dostal did Calgary, Detroit, and Seattle. But those tough games that he had, the loss to Edmonton, the loss to Colorado, and the loss to Philly, I think 2 of those were back-to-backs. And then one of them was like a 4-day layoff where they were coming in tired. So, again, the games you're getting, a few of these performances, they're tough against good teams, high-scoring teams. They're going to deflate the numbers a little bit, but more often when he's been in the net than he's not, I've said, okay, you know, it looks good. You know, there looks like there's something there he's building on last year. Ideally, you know, we talked about this last time and the way Gibson's playing. If he gets moved, can Dostal be the starter by the end of the season? I don't know if my stance has changed from what I had said before. I think I'm still kind of in the same spot. It's going to be tough for him. I think he could be ready to take the starting job if necessary, if the Ducks do move on from John Gibson. It's still going to be tough. It's still not a great team. They're marginally better than last year, so there are going to be tough games. But I don't think he's lost any games on his own. You look at those games where you know he let in 8, let in 6. Like those are bad games all around by the entire team.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the thing for me is I just don't feel like the Ducks goaltending has been a liability this year. I don't think their goaltending has been the reason they've been, you know, not in games or anything like that. It's been health. It's been penalties. It's been a lack of production from some of the players at the top of the lineup. Like, it's been a talent disparity on a lot of nights. You know, it's just really interesting to me, man. Cause like, I just, you know, we've talked about this again 100 times. Like I've never felt like goaltending was the issue in Anaheim, even when it looked like Gibby was cooked. And to see this team this year have a much more cohesive defensive plan and scheme in front of the goalies and to see both of them play better than they did last year, I don't know what you want, man. That's just, it's just so nice to be able to look and be like, yeah, like if we lose, we lose. But like, it's not like we're not losing games because of the goalies. It's just not happening. And I'm sure that there is a game or two here where, you know, you ask Cronin or some of the other players, even the goalies themselves, they would be like, look, I should have had one or two of these goals and we could have won that game. And yeah, that's fine. I get that.
Comes with the position, right? So,
but there's just, yeah, but there's just not any reason to be concerned about goaltending right now. And I think the thing that remains interesting to what you were talking about with moving on from Gibby is how does this year affect how Gibson is viewed outside of the organization? And also, how does this year affect what, you know, Verbeek wants to do? Because I just, I don't want to wait for Lucas Dostal's next deal to be imminent before figuring it out.
No. I think if there, I swear I say this every year, but I think if there's a year that Gibson gets traded, I think it could be this year. There's a lot of teams out there, good teams that are maybe on the outside looking in the playoff picture right now, or in a playoff spot, kind of the outside looking in on being one of the elite teams in this league that are in a desperate hunt for a netminder. And I think John Gibson, the way he's played, you know, everybody, the numbers aren't great. 904 save percentage in a vacuum isn't that great. When you watch the guy play this year, he has kept the Ducks into some games. He's dragged them to some wins they didn't deserve. You look at the team we're playing tonight, you know, their big goalie signing, Ilya Samsonov, they just sent on waivers. They've got Joseph Wall, who's a rookie. They have, I think, Matt Hill to be playing tonight, who's got his NHL debut. Martin Jones is tonight. Sorry, yeah. But they just brought up Hildeby, and then is their other option. I mean, he's playing pretty good tonight, but that's for a team that has aspirations to win a Stanley Cup, you can't have that. So they're a team. We say this every year, but the Leafs are a team that could get looking at netminder. The Devils are a team that everybody thought they would be better right now. They're just hanging on to that last, or I think they're outside of that last wild card spot right now. 2014-2, they need a netminder because Vanacek, they're having the same problem with him, who they had signed to be their netminder, and he hasn't been that great, and Schmid hasn't been that great either. So they're looking at, so I think there's a market from teams that are kind of desperate for netminders to try and make a push that I could see him going somewhere. I could see both those markets interesting. Obviously, New Jersey a little bit closer to his hometown. The Leafs, I don't know if that's interesting for John Gibson, but certainly a team that if they get the right netminder, things could change for them because they have a lot of talent on that roster. So I think we could see him get moved this year. And like you said, the Ducks could finally be in a position with watching how Lucas Dostal has played in games like this where they say, okay, I think he might be ready to take that next step, you know, bring a netminder back in a trade or in that trade or in a separate trade to kind of be able to split the load with him for the rest of the season and see how things go. I think they're in the best position they have ever been to be able to allow John Gibson to go and let somebody else take the reins.
Yeah, and I think it's especially interesting because there's a few different places I think he could reasonably end up, right? You've got Toronto and New Jersey, and I would say Edmonton is the other one. That's probably the big one there.
Yep.
Minnesota, I think, is a team that you could certainly look at it. You know, Gustafson hasn't been good this year. And if, you know, he's struggling, then yeah, Marc-Andre.
If Fleury goes down, yeah.
Yeah, like Gustafson's
hurt right now too, and Fleury's being kind of thrust into the starting job. They both haven't been good. So if Fleury goes down, you never know.
Then you've got LA. I think I already said Carolina as a team I think is a really interesting
Hey, hold on. You're doing your boy no justice here in LA saying they're looking for a netminder.
Look, man.
Cam Talbot has been a stud this year.
Do you want to go into the playoffs with 35-year-old fucking Cam Talbot? He might even be older than that.
I mean, like, the way he's playing, though, man. Like, it's...
I'm not disagreeing with you, but also I just
36-year-old Cam Talbot, by the way.
Yeah, I look, man, I love him. I want good things for him, you know. Like, I just, if you're LA, I just wonder, like, are you anxious? Like, the fucking Pierre-Luc Dubois thing hasn't quite worked out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, do you really want to just be like, ah, screw it, let's just see what happens with Cam Talbot and we'll address this in the offseason? Maybe that is what you do, right? Maybe you run the whole year out with Cam Talbot and then maybe you call about Gibson or another goalie, you know, once the year ends. But I just, the year that they're having, I don't think LA should be comfortable. I think they should be aggressive. I just think there are a lot of interesting teams out there that could use a goalie. And, you know, we talk about this a lot too. Like, it's going to come down really more than anything to how much is Pat Verbeek willing to eat and how much does he want to get back?
Mm-hmm.
You know, is he willing to take back money? Because if he's willing to take back money, you know, maybe you do look at something like Toronto where Samsonov makes 3.5. You've got Ryan Reeves, I think, makes like 1.5 or something like that. I know. But I'm just thinking about the numbers, right? You know, maybe you take back, you know, fucking Camp for some shit, you know. But like, I just, there's interesting questions to be asked. And I also think you can make a perfectly reasonable argument for, you know what? We've finally been able to put Gibby behind a team as a veteran netminder that can do some things in front of him. And so let's see what happens there.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, Mason McTavish is trying to fight. Who's he trying to fight? I think who's 37?
I don't know. I feel like that used to be Engvall's number for Toronto, but he's not there anymore.
Some goober. I don't know. Wow. This is craziness. Oh, is it Liljegren?
37 on. Yes, it's Liljegren. Yeah.
Oh, he's getting under Mason's skin. This is fun. This game's getting chippy. I like it.
We've talked about this before. Like, honestly, I'd love for him to go to New Jersey and bring somebody like Alexander Holtz back in that deal. Vanacek maybe thrown in to help with the cap situation.
Yeah.
Ideally, I think that works for both, honestly. For Gibby, he doesn't have to go to Toronto for that market. New Jersey is still a little, you know, it's maybe more in the media than, say, Anaheim is, but certainly not at the level of, like, a Toronto or a New York or a Boston or something like that. He is closer to home. He's closer to Pittsburgh. So that helps him as well to be a little bit closer to family. And they're a good team, man. Like, they really, when you look and dive into their numbers, and again, we talked about this before, like, goaltending has been their issue. There are some teams you look at and, you know, goals against average isn't great. And you can say, oh, it's a team thing, whatever. When you dive into the underlying stats for their team, goaltending has been a major, major issue for them. Vanacek has not been good. Schmid has not been good. Nico Daws, I think, has just come up for them and looked okay. But ideally, they need a veteran netminder to come in and help them win some games here. And honestly, when you look on the market right now, like, John Gibson probably is the best fit for them to bring somebody like that in. And it turns them, I think, from a team just on the fringe here to being one of, you know, competing with the Hurricanes and the Panthers and the Rangers and the Bruins for top spot in the division. I think they're one of those pieces away from really changing the way their season has gone.
How many goalies in the East are better than John Gibson?
Shesterkin.
You've got the three Russians, which I think
Sorokin. Yeah.
Vasilevsky. Even if Vasilevsky hasn't been great this year, I'm not going to sit here and act like if I have one game to win, I'm not taking Vasilevsky over John Gibson. Like, I'm not.
Yeah, he's also coming back from an injury, and it's tough the way things have gone there. Beyond that, like, you can maybe make a case for Bobrovsky the way he's played this year, but that's tough.
The Boston
Allmark guys and Swayman, but again, is that product of the team? Because they both do well every year under this team and the way they play. I think you get those, the three Russians, the Sorokin, Shesterkin, and Vasilevsky, and then it's between him and, you know, Bobrovsky and Allmark, and Yari hasn't been good, so you can't really throw him into that discussion. So that there aren't too many better than him in the East now. And if they are, again, like we mentioned, they're the elite of the elite in this league.
Right.
And with, you know, Shesterkin, Sorokin, and Vasilevsky being potentially three of the top five goaltenders in the entire National Hockey League.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 100%. That's the thing. Like, I just, it's such an interesting thing. And, like, you know, like, even, you know, like, I feel like Carolina to me is the counterweight to the Boston Vegas thing, right? Mm-hmm. Where with Vegas, it was like, oh, well, they had Laurent Bossois and Aiden Hill, and they just figured it out with all these guys. And it's like, yeah, but there are also teams that are just as good, just as well coached, Carolina being the one.
Mm-hmm.
And they can't make it out of the fucking first or second round because they don't have a goalie who can win them a game.
Mm-hmm.
And it's clearly not a system issue. It's clearly not a coaching issue. If you want to say Carolina doesn't necessarily have the high end talent, I mean,
I think that's hard to argue.
Jack Eichel the best goal scorer on the two teams, but Aho and Svechnikov were right there.
Yeah, Seth Jarvis is taking a big step forward. He's the second highest point getter on the Hurricanes this year. He's got 27 points in 38 games. You know, Aho has been the main guy, but Svechnikov has come back and just been lighting it up since he returned. Netchash has been good. Jarvis, Aho, like, they have a good team. Brent Burns, the way they play too.
Don't bring him up.
But like you said, I mean, beyond recently, right? The reason they struggled early on, they're in a good spot now, but they could not buy a win from their netminders. Freddie's been hurt. Ronta was the guy. Kachetkov early on wasn't good. I mean, Kachetkov over his last 10 games has been one of the best in the league. So that's why they've been winning games lately. They're on a 4-game winning streak. They're 6-1-3 in their last 10. A lot of that has been because of the play of the team with Peter Kachetkov in net. But how sustainable is that, right? Because we've seen this guy go on runs before. And I think obviously they're going to take their time and test it and see by the deadline if he's still going. And I don't think they're a team that moves for a netminder. But you're right in comparing them with Boston and Vegas there and saying, well, it's the product of the team that those netminders are good. Well, no, because the Hurricanes are in a very similar situation, the way they built their team and how good they are and the way they're coached. But they just can't seem to put it together because they don't have a solid netminder. Like, Ullmark and Swayman are great netminders. Logan Thompson, Aiden Hill, great netminders. When you put the right system in front of them, they can win you a game or help you get to that
goal. But that's my thing. I don't think either of those – like, maybe you have to say Aiden Hill can win you a game, but I'm not 100% sure on that. And I think that's what it is, right, is you see the limitations
mm-hmm.
of – not having a difference-making goaltender. Because say what you will about Bobrovsky, on a general basis, he is comfortably in the middle of the league, if not sometimes below average. Bobrovsky can win you a fucking game. Like, he can have the type of night where you're just like, oh, Bob won us the game.
Yeah,
I've felt this way about Freddie his entire career. Freddie doesn't do that. I'm not 100% sure how capable Ullmark and Swayman are. I would have more faith in them than either of the dudes in Vegas.
Mm-hmm.
But, they've had a really good team in front of them. They're really well coached. And it's also something to be said that the guy that they were really good under is the dude that then went to Vegas and did it with other goals. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
And I just wonder if you're Carolina, like, how willing are you to continue to just not give Rod Brind'Amour a fucking goalie? Like, I don't know how, like, it's so stupid, but, like, you look at Carolina and you're just like, okay, they either need to go out and get a B-plus goal scorer, which is hard to get, mm-hmm. or they need to go out and get a difference-making goaltender, which is hard to get. But you can't just keep fucking running it back. And this, well, let's just keep finding right-handed defensemen who shoot from the point a lot with Burns and D'Angelo, and then they were in on Carlson. Like, that doesn't actually solve the problem.
It's not even really something they ever really needed either. Listen, like, the Hurricanes have a few options they could do, but they've just run experiments so far that haven't panned out. Obviously, the Freddie experiment and his injuries that hasn't panned out. At a time, they thought about Antti Raanta maybe being the guy, and that beyond being a backup hasn't panned out. I think this Kachetkov thing is the last experiment for them because they don't have any in-house pieces to really run with from here or any that are close to the NHL. Just it'll be interesting to see what they do because I know at some point it was rumored that Askarov could be on his way out of Nashville. Do you go that route and try and get a young guy in and build it up that way? Do you have the time to do that? Or do you go out and hunt a John Gibson and bring the veteran presence in there? Honestly, you know, there's merit to both approaches on what you'd rather do. They're still a relatively young team. But again, there's more risk, I think, on the Askarov side of things than the John Gibson side of things. But there's some flexibility in how much he makes and being able to make additions elsewhere as well.
Yeah, that's the thing, right? And then you just hope, essentially, that you can win a cup before you have to pay him. And then it doesn't hurt so much when you have to move on from guys that you like in order to keep Askarov around.
Yeah, but I mean, like, he still hasn't played a single game for the Predators this year, which is
Here's an insane fucking question. Would you just trade 2 first round picks for UC Saros?
I mean, yeah, I think he's proven that he can be a solid netminder. He's dragged Nashville. I did not expect Nashville to be in a playoff spot at this point this year, and he's been excellent for them so far.
2 more years at $5 million. He's going to be 29 at the end of the year, April 19th. Like, I would just have to call them and be like, hey, man, what is it going to take? You know, is it a first, a second, and a third? Like, is it 2 firsts? Is it, you know, do we have to give you our best young player? Like, you know, I mean, shit, like 2 firsts, Jack Drury, and whoever the fuck. Like, I just, UC Saros, again, is like the perfect goalie to add to that team because in a system, he's shown that he's capable of playing well, and he has also shown that he is of a caliber that he can win you 3 out of 5 games, 3 out of 6 games.
Yep.
And they just have never had someone like that. You know?
I could see it if Nashville falls out of a playoff spot. If Edmonton picks it up or the Blues or the Wilds kind of start going and Nashville falls off, which is definitely possible. And they're out of a playoff spot by the deadline. And, you know, somebody calls them with an offer that's too good to refuse. It is nice knowing that you could move him and you still have Askarov. And Askarov has played well. I think he's had a couple of relief appearances this year where he's looked excellent. And in the AHL, he's looked pretty good over the last couple of years. So it's definitely possible. I could see it. I think it'd be one of the ones that are out there. You wouldn't expect it to happen. But it's not, I think, out of the realm of possibility that Nashville, depending on where they are at that point, could consider moving him if they get the right offer.
Yeah. Also, if you're Nashville, do you want to be in the playoffs this year? Like, wouldn't you rather have some hope of doing something weird in the lottery?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Lucas Dostal save watch. He's at 48 now.
Yeah, and they're about to go on the penalty kill, so.
It's going to get over to 50.
Oh, dude, he might get to 60 tonight. There's 7 minutes left.
If this goes to OT, it's good. He's getting to 60 for sure.
Bro, there's 7 minutes left, and the power play hasn't even started yet.
What's the Ducks record? Is like 54 or something, isn't it? From John Gibson a couple seasons ago? 54, 56, something like that.
Let's see here. Anaheim Ducks goalie single game save record. Most saves in a game. John Gibson, 53 saves on 59 shots. He gave up 6 goals.
Yeah.
To Pittsburgh.
I think he has the shutout one too. I don't remember what it is, but he has the most saves on the shutout too.
No, he does not. Do you want to guess who has the most saves in a shutout?
Is it recent?
It is very recent.
Is it Miller?
Nope.
Oh, Stolarz then.
Yep. 46 saves.
So he's already, if he gets the shutout, he's already Sharks. Broken. He's already broken. 53 is the all-time record for the Duff, right? So.
Yeah. 53 saves is the record.
He's at 49 in a shutout right now if it continues. So he's already broken that. He's going to hit 50 if he gets the shutout for sure. I think no matter what, he gets to 53. Whether the Leafs score or not, he's getting to 53. He's a four away with 5 minutes to go, and Leafs are on a power play right now. So,
Boy. Here. They score?
Yeah, I got an update to our score on the power
play. Well, that's on us, folks.
Shot number 50 goes in the back of the net from John Tavares on the power play. That's our fault.
Yeah. Okay, Anthony Stolarz has a 46-game shutout, or 46-shot shutout. Jonas Hiller has a 45-shot shutout. And another goalie had a 45-shot shutout in a 1-0 win over Colorado on December 22nd, 1998. Do you want to guess who that goaltender was?
1998?
I do not remember this guy.
I Martin Gerber?
Dominic Roussel.
Jeez.
Well, that was fun. But, yeah. Jonas Hiller, Ryan Miller, John Gibson. Mikhail Shtalenkov has a 51 save, 2 goals against game. Jeez Louise. So gross, bro.
Anything else Ducks related you want to chat? I do want to talk just kind of league stuff as well before, but I want to make sure we cover everything. We've missed a lot, but we haven't missed a lot. You know what I mean? It's been kind of that mid-season stretch where we've missed a lot of games, but we haven't missed a lot of talking points.
How do you feel about the defense as a whole right now? I want to ask you that.
I think it's okay. I think it's progressing in the right direction. I think with Drysdale coming back and you're getting a better picture of what it's going to look like. Minchikov has slowed down a little bit, but I still think he's looked good. The rookies and him and Lacombe, they've looked good, and again, things have slowed down, but they're fine. I like what Gudas brings. I'm slightly disappointed in a sense. I still do like what he brings, but I feel like it hasn't been what maybe he's done in the past. I guess he's been in better teams, so it's been a little bit of a different approach to his game here in Anaheim. But him and Lyubushkin have been good. Cam's been Cam, so I don't have too many concerns whether they've been better than last year. And I think with the young guys in the lineup and with young guys that are going to get in the lineup, Zellweger being the prime candidate, the way he's playing in San Diego this year, that they're trending in the right direction. But talk to me in 15, 20 games so I can get a little bit better of a look at Drysdale and how he's doing. And I think I might be a little bit more optimistic.
So here's the thing that's interesting. In expected goals against per 60, Lacombe and Gudas is third.
So Minchikov, Lyubushkin is one?
No, I mean in the league, according to MoneyPuck.
Oh, in the league. Oh, my goodness. I thought you were talking about the team.
Nope.
Okay. I take that back, Lacombe and Gudas.
That's expected goals again. Expected goals against per 60, they're seventh.
Hey, it's not bad. Not bad at all.
Oh, no. Vakanainen Gudas is seventh with 308. Okay, so that's what it was, because they've Lacombe Gudas is 14th. Yeah, dude, I don't know, man. I genuinely like Radko Gudas. Like, I could not be happier with how well he's played this year.
I love the guy. I do. I'm biased because I own him in fantasy hockey and he hasn't got me as many hits as I wanted.
But you know what? Like, it's so funny because, like, I think you're right. I do think that he hasn't quite been maybe as, like, physical at times as I would have hoped a little bit.
Yeah.
But just, like, it's...
You can't ask for much more than what he's given you. Like, he has been good for the role that he fills. If you asked me at the beginning of the season... the way he's played, I think when we were looking at when he came in and what we thought he would do this year, I think he's done everything we hoped for from him. So you can't ask for much more than that. He's been a solid addition to this team. Lyubushkin's been a solid addition to this team. And having them both on the right side and now Drysdale still come back, it's provided some shape and solidity to the blue line, which is nice. We haven't had that since a lot of our right hand. When we had a lot of right-handed defensemen at one point, and then losing Montour and Vatanen, it's been a struggle for a while, and not having a ton of defensemen on the right side. So it's nice to see these two guys come in and now with Drysdale back healthy, kind of solidify that and give us some shape and structure.
Yeah, and I think, you know, it's you're starting to see the team defensively kind of like show. I mean, yeah, like I think you said, like take shape, but like just see what different guys can bring. Like I think Vakanainen has been a huge get for this team. Like I just think, again, like we talked about it earlier in the season, man, he's just been so good. He's just played so well and so responsibly while he's been in there. Like it's just been so nice. Like there's just so much optimism around this team that it's going to be really interesting in a couple of years. So let me ask you this. Let's bring that up since I just reminded myself of that. Pat Verbeek did an interview with John Shannon and somebody else, and I don't remember who it was. And they asked him how far away they think the team is. And he said he thinks at least 2 years, if he's honest.
Yep.
What is your reaction to that comment?
I agree with it. I think they are about 2 years away from being competitive. I think you've got guys like Olin Zellweger and Tristan Lanoue about a year or so away from being, you know, full-time NHLers along the same lines of Minchikov. Zellweger could be that next year. Lanoue, maybe a season in the AHL next year, and then 2 years from now is up in the NHL. So then you've got a lot of good young defensemen in and around the lineup that you can replace some of these guys with. You know, you've got Leo Carlson for another 2 years to develop, Zegras, McTavish. You know, you've got guys like Pastrnak and Perreault that you hope get going, whoever you draft in this year. And then maybe guys like Sidorov and a few others hit so that you
Carey
can.
Carey
Terrence, who's just had a pretty good World Juniors as well. So you've got time for those guys to develop and time for the guys in the lineup to establish themselves. I think 2 years is the cusp where it'd be the earliest you start to see things turn around. I think anywhere between 2 and 4 years, and again, it all just depends on how guys develop. Can Lucas Dostal become a starting netminder in the NHL? That's a big if and or but on whether this team is going to be competitive in 2 years or 4 years. Again, is, you know, Jamie Drysdale and Zellweger and Lanoue and Minchikov and Lacombe, all these guys going to hit and be able to stay and contribute all together in the NHL roster? That's an if. Are, you know, is Leo Carlson going to develop into a first line center? Trevor Zegras, Troy Terry going to be 70-point forwards? McTavish, is he going to be a, you know, 60 to 70 point guy? And are the Ducks going to add any more, you know, forward talent through the draft to be able to supplement that? So I think all those things, and however they pan out, will either get you closer to that 2 year mark or closer to that 4 year mark. And it just depends on how many of those things pan out, how many of them hit. But yeah, I think as Jim, you got to be optimistic. And for him to say 2 years, I think that's spot on and being, you know, realistic and optimistic at the same time. I think anything sooner, it would be ridiculous. They're definitely not a year or so away from competing, but I think you can realistically look at this team and say, hey, if things go right, they are 2 years away from competing for a playoff spot.
Yeah, no, I think that they should finish closer to 10 than 5 next year. And I think the year after that, you're hoping you're late in the lottery. And in that third year, I think you're looking at, okay, this should be a wild card team at the very least, because that's, you know, that's the first year of Carlson's new deal. That's, what else are we looking at with that? You're looking at, you know, some of the teams in the Pacific Division at that point, maybe struggling or aging.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, Vegas has an older roster, you know. The Kings, I don't know that that's the team to worry about, but like Vancouver, the wheels could fall off the wagon of Vancouver at any point. Like JT Miller you know, is like 30, 31 years old. Like, I don't think you're going to be keep looking at him to be great. The Flames are a fucking joke. The Blues are a fucking joke.
I think anything could happen. Two teams in the West, you can be confident that they should be good for the next 4 to 5 years, and that's the Stars and the Avs. Beyond that, I don't think there's any guarantee. Like, I didn't think the Jets would be where they are.
No, not at all.
The fact that if they win their next game, they're even on games played with Vancouver, they're top in the National Hockey League. I think it's the Ducks that they play next, I believe, unless they have a game tomorrow. They could be the best. Yeah, they could be the best team in the Western Conference. I don't think that's sustainable. I think they've always had the roster. Just I'm surprised they put it together this year. I didn't think with everything going on that they'd be able to do it. You know, like you said, the Canucks at any point wheels could fall off. The Golden Knights are getting older. LA, kind of a combination of they've got some young talent, but then when Kopitar and Doughty are gone, how does that look? And then everybody beyond that, it's like, okay, the Oilers could be good, but they're usually not. The Wild, the same. The Blues, the same. So confidence really only in the Avs and the Stars. So if a lot of these teams pan out or tail off, the Ducks are, I think, in the best position of any of the rest of the teams to have young talent that could kind of vault them up these standings as the other teams fall down. So projection-wise, it's maybe a good time to be 2 years away, right? Because 2 years away, there's a lot of the chance for these other teams to kind of fall off and things to fall apart for them, where you can kind of take the place.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
So a few of these teams that that you didn't expect to be in positions they are. So yeah, man, I'm cautiously optimistic to say the least. I would say I fall right in that 2 to 3 year range. If you had to give, you know, if I had to answer that question and say, when do I think the Ducks can be competitive again? I think 2 to 3 years is fair.
Yeah. Congratulations to Lucas Dostal, who set the official team record with 54 saves.
Let's go. Now let's get that dub.
Man, I just don't want to lose in overtime. I just
at least have 104 shot attempts, by the way. You know what would be?
They have no fucking way. They have 104.
Yeah, that's what my buddy just sent me. He said at least 104 shot attempts.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah, it would be it would be perfect karma for
suck
us.
Beat Phoenix. Suck it, Phoenix.
We were shitting on the shootout before this for the Ducks to have this game and lose in the shootout.
No, because I don't want the loser point. Damn it.
I'm just saying we were shitting on it, and that's how this game would end.
But, yeah, I mean, we should have known it was going to go into overtime because it's the Leafs, and they have, like, the most overtime wins of any team in the league.
Kawhi with 30 points in that Clippers game.
Whatever, we beat Phoenix because Phoenix sucks.
I'm very happy that Phoenix is doing bad, too. So.
Oh, dude, I don't like them. I don't like them at all.
You know who the new team in Phoenix is? The Arizona Coyotes in a playoff spot of defying all the odds. They are in the 8th seed with a 19-15-2 record. I kind of love to see it, man. I don't know how they're doing it, but they're doing it.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like the answer is fucking luck.
right. Not even like Logan Cooley is tearing it up. Like they're just getting it done.
Wow. Well, I get, like, Connor Ingram, man, 5th in the league for even strength GSAX. And let's see, Connor Ingram is also 15th in the league at even strength save percentage.
This is a team with just some of the most random guys on this roster.
Just and a bunch of dudes, man.
They have the 11th, they're the 11th highest scoring team in the league, man.
It's fucking, they're just dudes.
They're just dudes. A bunch of dudes. Clayton Keller is the star. Then you got Matthias Michelli, who has 27 points. Lawson Crouse, finally fulfilling the potential from where he was drafted. He has 24 points. Nick Schmaltz, 23. Alex Kerfoot has 23. Nick Bjugstad has 21. Sean Durzi's got 20. Michael Carcone has 14 goals and 19 points. Like, it's just a bunch of guys riding on vibes, and you kind of got to love it.
Yeah, other than the fact that I hate them, you do have to love it. And it's fun to hate them, too. It's a fun hate because those games are great right now.
Well, man, like, I hated them, like, the Domi Duclair era. I hated them.
Yeah.
I hated playing them. They'd always torture us randomly after and just being a completely awful team. But I'm starting to like them. I'm starting to like, you know, they're just kind of a plucky team that is a little bit fun to watch. So I can't complain too much. But I want to talk standings a little bit around the league before we wrap up, because I want to see if there's any surprises for you this year, the way things have panned out beyond obviously the ones we talked about, the Arizonas, the Winnipegs. But in the East, you've got Boston, New York, Florida, Carolina, the Islanders, Toronto, Philly, New Jersey, holding on to the top eight spots. Washington's right there, and Tampa Bay's right there. Pittsburgh, 40 points outside of a playoff spot. I think we both nailed that one in Pittsburgh tailing off this year. Is there anything you're surprised by in the East this year?
Philadelphia, where, man. Guys?
Philly, yeah. Being good? Philly being in a playoff spot, yeah.
I don't know how anybody but John Tortorella could have said this is what this year is going to be. Like, and I'm stoked for them because a lot of it has been Sean Couturier being a fucking, you know, going back to being a Selke candidate. And there it is. Game over. Trial. And it's Austin Matthews.
Oh, that's a tough one. That's a tough one. But
first overtime loss of the season for the Ducks. Took them to what, their 35th, 36th game? So, let's see.
But yeah, man, Philly's Konechny's having a great year. Carter Hart's rebounded. Their backup goalie, Samuel Ersson, has split starts with Carter Hart and looked pretty good. Bobby Brink, the rookie's come in and been pretty impressive for them. Sanheim's become the number one D. Like you mentioned, Sean Couturier's had a great return to the lineup. Cam York, Tyson Forrester have jumped up and been really good for them. So they've just got kind of a lot of things that have gone well for them. And yeah, surprisingly, man, they're holding on to that seventh spot right now.
Yeah, I it makes me so happy, man, to see that for them. Like, I don't know how it happened.
Big Flyers guy?
You know, dude, it's so funny, man. I fucking hate the internet because what happened is there's like all these people online that I like, you know or whatever, however you want to say it. And like, I just randomly found myself like liking a lot of Flyers fans. And just like when you like someone, you want the stupid shit that they care about to go well for them.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And so I'm just like, oh, like there's Flyers people that I like. And like, I like Couturier. I really, you know, I like the Briere era Flyers. Like when they played the Hawks in the finals, like that was a fun team. So it's just, it's so random, but it makes me happy. It, just cause especially with everything Couturier had going on. And then after seeing the whole Ryan Ellis situation, to have them get somebody back and be meaningful to them that they thought was going to really be a big part of that team for a couple of years, is just, it's nice. What about you? Who's your biggest surprise in the East?
I don't think there's anything surprising about the teams that have been bad, really. Like, you know, we expected Ottawa and Buffalo maybe in Detroit to take steps forward, and they kind of have in a sense, but they're still around 500 teams, and they're just not better than the teams in front of them. I think Tampa, you could say, is maybe surprising, but they've had the injuries that they've dealt with and some roster turnover. I think
if they make the playoffs, by the way.
Yeah, if they make a playoffs, they're going to be one of those teams that you hate to have face in the eighth seed. They could make a run. Like, they're just that good. I think, if anything, it's maybe the Panthers, man. Like, they've looked very good, and it's not like they've been a bad team. I didn't know if things were going to go their way this year. Like, I expected the Rangers and the Bruins to be two of the top teams, the Hurricanes to be up there, maybe the Leafs to be good. I just thought the Panthers would kind of fall down and be, you know, around where the Flyers are and have a similar record to the Flyers. But they've looked damn good, man. Like 23-12-2. They've got a lot of help from the rest of the roster. Like, it hasn't been the Matthew Tkachuk show. He hasn't even really been that great. He's got 28 points in 37 games. It's Sam Reinhardt. He's got 45 points for this team. Barkov's been good. Verhaeghe's been good. Rodriguez has come in and looked good. Bobrovsky and our boy Stolarz have been a good duo for them as well. I don't know, man. They've surprised me. I didn't think that they would be as good as they have been. And for them to be kind of on knocking on the door of the Rangers and the Bruins, who have been by far and away the two best teams in the conference, I'm a bit surprised that they are where they are.
Matthew Tkachuk is shooting 4.7%.
Yeah, that's going to turn around at some point.
He is going to score.
That's scary for them, though. You think, like, if once he starts going.
20 goals in their last 40 games.
Yeah, they could make a run at you know, topping that conference if he gets going and everybody else stays as hot as they are. Sam Reinhart becoming a star for them this year. He's always been good, but the way he's been playing for them this year, that's been huge for their success. Okay, and then the West before we wrap up. What's your big surprise? I guess we'll do a positive and a negative for this because I feel like there's a little bit more surprises at West.
I mean. Positive surprise. I think it's Winnipeg. Look, man, I would have had way more faith in Vancouver than Winnipeg to start this year. I like the bones of that Vancouver team. I like Demko. I like Hughes. I like Pettersson. I think obviously having Besser turn back into what they were hoping he was going to be obviously goes a long way.
JT Miller is still a stud for that team too, so.
Which is unfortunate because you would have really liked for him to be terrible. It's weird to say Colorado, man. Like, there's no world in which Ryan Johansson should be. He's been so fucking bad this year.
That team, on paper, outside of MacKinnon, Rantanen, and Makar, is not great.
Nope.
And they are somehow just piecing it together, getting it done. And, yeah, it is surprising, man, that they are still top of the conference despite everything else. I mean, it shows you how good those three are. Like, they carry this team. On a nightly basis.
Second but you've got, team you've still got forward, Devin but. Taves. You've got Bowen Byram. Like, they've got good players. Josh Manson is good. Like,
Nichushkin is, again, maybe unfortunate, the same as JT Miller. Nichushkin has been very, very good, too, for them.
Mm-hmm.
19 goals, 38 points. But, like, it is the big three, man. It's the big three up front for them. It drops off heavily after those guys. MacKinnon's got 61 points. Rantanen has 47. Nichushkin has 38. Can you guess who's the next highest forward on their team in points?
Well, I can because I'm looking at it, yeah. And that would be one-time former Anaheim Duck link trade rumor target, Jonathan Drouin. I saw something today. I think it was today or yesterday, but I saw something that like he had like 3 points in his first like 15 or 16 games, and he's got like 15 points in his last. 20 yeah. or something
they stuck
stupid.
Him in the top six and he started going
it's crazy you put a skill guy in the top six with other skill guys and he's able to figure right. it out
yeah but I mean yeah dude beyond those guys it's not bleak they have good depth guys and they do their role but like those guys carry this team I think almost more than anybody else and this is a team that doesn't have Landeskog for the entire year because he's still injured and for them to do what they're doing even like in that they're not that great like Gorgiev has an .895 save percentage for them and their backup is Prospetov, I guess that would be former Coyotes player, and he hasn't even been that great. So it's just been the offensive talent and the three man trio that these guys have are so good that it's just impossible to stop them on a nightly basis. Nathan MacKinnon, man, he again. Working his way back, if he ever got out of it, back into that conversation of being the best player in this league. Like
he should probably be a bigger rumor for MVP.
Yeah, like, I mean, it's him and Kucherov and maybe Panarin, but.
Yeah. So here's the thing that's interesting. We're listening to you talk about this Colorado team. This is actually in. It's not like. I don't know how to say it, but like utility wise, right? The way that this team is successful is actually very old school, where you've got a couple of guys who are doing all of the work from a production standpoint. And then it's just a bunch of guys buying into their role, playing well, and the team as a whole is successful. Like, does this season. And everything that we're talking about and the struggles and the lack of actual legitimate top six scoring and the lack of a number two center. Like, Is Jared Bednar comfortably in the top five coaching conversation? Is he in that range for you? Because, like, he was always kind of just outside of it for me, just because I thought the roster talent was so significant. But just the way that he's gotten this team to buy in and everybody just really commit to their role. Like, I think, you know, a lot of the stuff about where he's at, like, he's got to be pretty comfortably, like, in that conversation for one of the best coaches in the league.
I think so, man. Like, I mean, they are not the same team that won the Stanley Cup by any means. Their roster composition is completely different. The way they play is different to some extent. He's turned it around and just said, listen, we've got our strengths, and our strengths are obvious, and we're going to lean on our strengths. And then when those guys aren't out there, we're going to play a certain way that just allows us to win games by scoring as many goals as possible. I think he has to, you have to give him some credit. Like, again, it makes it a lot easier when you have Nathan MacKinnon and Ronton and McCarr that you can run out there on the power play and pretty much contribute every power play point that is possibly out there. Like, I think anytime I ever see a power play goal, it's like MacKinnon from Ronton and McCarr. Maybe Nichushkin gets a
or Devin Taves coming down from the point against the Ducks.
Yeah. Devin Taves exactly.
Turning into fucking Ray Bourque.
But yeah, he definitely gets some credit. I think who's coaching in Winnipeg now?
It's still Rick Bonus.
Is it still Rick Bonus? Well, mm-hmm. I think he definitely gets some credit for the way that they've played this year. Defensively, I mean, that's a typical Rick Bonus team. Like, defensively, they've been unstoppable. And once they're fully healthy and you get Kyle Connor, I think, back in the lineup, unless he's already back in the lineup, they are a very scary team to play against as well. Second in goals allowed so far this year. So somehow Winnipeg second in goals allowed, but have the 27th ranked penalty kill. So you know what they'll be trying to do at the deadline is to get better there. But yeah, I mean, the West is so interesting for me. The East is kind of like, if you had you got your projections, there's a few guys, maybe like New Jersey, maybe thought would be higher, Philly you thought would be lower, but like, they're the kind of the teams that you thought would be where they are. The West, for sure, like, there are those guys. Like, you know, Colorado would be there. You know, Vegas would be there. Dallas would be there. But the Preds being in seventh, the Jets being in third, the Coyotes being in eighth, like, that's surprising. Neither one of Edmonton, St. Louis, or Minnesota, even Calgary to some extent, being in a playoff spot is pretty surprising. Like, you definitely could have made your arguments against all four of those teams, but for all four of them to not be in a playoff spot at like the 35 game mark is definitely surprising, to say the least. I thought you would have to say at least one of them would be in there. I didn't think Arizona would be anywhere close. I thought Nashville wasn't going to be that good this year. So it is surprising to see the way things have shaked up there. And you know, somehow San Jose winning 9 games is surprising enough in its own right too. I don't know how they've won 9 games.
Yeah, it's funny you said that, and I was like, "What about that?" Is surprising. You're like, "Oh, that they actually made it to 9 wins." Jesus, man.
They are us from last year. 32nd in goals, 32nd in shots on goal, 32nd in shooting percentage, 32nd in goals allowed, 31st in shots allowed, 28th penalty kill, 23rd in penalty minutes taken. The only thing they are marginally good at is they have the 19th ranked power play. Beyond that, it's bleak, and it's just the Hurdle and Granlund show out there in San Jose.
So here's what's fascinating. So in 5-on-5 shooting percentage, 32nd, Sharks, 31st, Ducks. Who do you think is 30th?
I feel like it's got to be a team randomly in the playoff spot or something.
Mm-hmm. It's a team we've talked about.
The Devils?
Florida.
Oh, my God.
5v5 shooting percentage. And then 29th, so fourth from the bottom, is the Kraken. And here's the thing that's interesting. The Kraken are only 1 point out of the wild card. And they have played 2 more games than Arizona. So that's against them. But, you know, I mean, Seattle could get weird and get hot maybe. Like, I don't.
They need to add a goal score. They had a goal score at the deadline too. I think that if there is one available, they should go out and try and get whoever the top goal scorer is. They need some offensive flair on this team because they don't have it.
They don't. And, you know, You know, they would be an interesting team for Henrique, honestly.
Tarasenko's been rumored to be on the move at the deadline. I think Tarasenko could be an interesting fit for them, too.
Hey, I had a super insane idea. And I wanted to ask you about it, because I don't know if I brought this up to you or not.
Okay.
As far as the Ducks just doing something weird and out of nowhere, how do you feel about trading for Brady Tkachuk?
I'd love it. I can't imagine Ottawa trades their young captain, but if you could somehow get him, I would definitely look. You have to, man.
Would you move McTavish for Brady Tkachuk?
Yeah, I think so, man. I think I would.
Or do you try to go all futures and go like?
I think ideally you go all futures. Yeah.
Leno, a first. You know.
Yeah, I think ideally you go all futures and you Hines, try and get it done.
Maybe.
Yeah.
I don't know why, but I was just thinking about it the other day. Like, trading for Brady Tkachuk would be super weird and super. I just think he would provide a dynamic to this team that would be very useful.
Oh, 100%.
Because he's an insane person.
100%. I've loved Matthew Tkachuk, and you've loved Matthew Tkachuk for a long time. And Brady Tkachuk plays kind of the same way in a sense.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe even a little crazier in the way he physically approaches the game than Matthew Tkachuk does. So I'd love him on the team, man. I think dynamic, if you can keep McTavish and you can keep the rest of those main guys, like he fits really nice with the guys, whether it's playing with McTavish or playing with Zegras and Terry, you can see where the fit would be on this team. And certainly he's well-liked in Ottawa. Certainly he would be well-liked here for the way he plays.
Yeah, 100%. He would be great. It was just an interesting thought, bringing in someone who's pretty reliably going to score 30 goals. The other one I thought about, and this is going to get me in trouble, but is Brady Tkachuk for Troy Terry and building around that. Now, you don't want to trade Troy for the same reason Ottawa doesn't want to trade Tkachuk, which is he's a young guy that means a lot to the team right now. But it was just an interesting thought. Since we're doing league-wide stuff real quick, and then we'll get out of here. Someone made a comment, and I thought it was very interesting. And there's someone who I think is wrong a lot, but also right a lot. And it's on Twitter. It's the Rebuilding Blog. Someone I have an account I'm very fond of. I have a lot of interesting conversations with them. And also, they're a big overall fan like me. So we need to talk about that more. Overalls are good. If your jersey... Would you trade Meyer for Gaudreau?
For Johnny Gaudreau?
Mm-hmm.
No.
You don't think so?
No, I'd let the Meyer experiment run out.
Because here's the thing. He has a no-move clause that kicks in next season, so July 1.
Meyer does?
Uh-huh. He hasn't been very good. There are some concerns that he's been hurt. So I think that is perfectly fair to take into. I just wonder, are we sure Meyer is what they need? And is Meyer what Jersey needs because of his size? Like, is that the main attraction? Is it because Jack Hughes is a slider kid? I don't think Jesper Bratt's a very big kid.
I think it's his size and his goal scoring ability, because they didn't
fucking has have thing.
Yeah, but from what they thought they were getting,
right?
Maybe even if you want to dive deeper into it, the chemistry he's had with Nico Hischier at the international level, that you could put those two guys together, and they'd be able to develop some chemistry there. I thought it was the greatest fit for him was to go there. Honestly, I thought he'd be the best fit for them physically. He provides something they don't have goal scoring wise. That's a perfect fit. Everything just kind of made sense for him. I don't know how it hasn't worked out for him. I don't know what it is. Like, this guy was great in San Jose on bad teams in San Jose. So I don't know what it is. I think eventually he figures it out, which is why I wouldn't move him yet, because I still think beyond anything you can get for him at this low, I do think he is still the best fit if things pan out for him. He's too talented for it to continue this way.
Here's the thing that's interesting. Timo Meyer, by weight, is the second biggest player on Jersey. We know he's played He's not like a true power forward, but he is comfortable using his size.
Yeah.
I just like, yeah, no, I think you're right. I just wonder, man. I just think it's an interesting question. And yeah, man, they fucking, dude, they're such a small team from a weight perspective. Most of their team is 6 foot or in that area, and most of the team is under 200 pounds. That's insane.
This, yeah, I don't know, man. This is a guy last year who averaged over 4 shots per game, 2 hits per game. He goes into this year, he's averaging 2.5 shots per game, 1 hit per game. So it just feels like he just hasn't been able to get things going both physically and offensively. I don't know. I can't see it.
Yeah, 100%. I totally get what you're saying. I just wonder if it's something you think about just because
he doesn't play
that up pace style, right? He's a much more methodical presence, which I think has value, obviously, and it's nice to have a change up. I just wonder if, you know, you do have, like, if you can send out Nico Hischier and Jesper Bratt and then also Gaudreau and Hughes, there's a scary lot to like there.
Yeah.
And I just, it's just very interesting. I mean, Jersey might be the biggest disappointment for me this season. And to see it come down to goaltending, which was just so fucking predictable, is just so frustrating.
Yeah, I don't know how they thought Vanacek and Schmid would be the answer, but there's a clear, if any team has a clear direction of 100% what they need heading into the deadline and needing one thing, it's New Jersey above everybody else. They need a goaltender bad. And if you're a team like the Ducks, who probably has the best goaltender available on the market, at least publicly available, go make him pay. Go make him pay to get this guy. And like I said, if you... get a tender. That's the big thing for me. If you can get Alexander Holtz from the Devils, bring him back. I don't really care what else you get, because I think Holtz would be a great fit for the young core that the Ducks have. He's proven, and with a limited role in New Jersey, that he can produce, and in the AHL that he can produce. So I think give him a bigger role in Anaheim. I'm playing with Leo Carlson. Get those two guys together. Man, it could be a lot of fun. So I'm praying beyond any John Gibson trade we've ever drawn up. I think this is the best fit for him and the best potential return, because New Jersey still has a lot of young prospects. Look at Seamus Casey, who's playing for the U.S. at the World Junior Championships right now. I mean, listen, I don't know. I think this might be reaching. I'm sure Devils fans would yell at me, but if you can somehow get Holtz and Casey back for John Gibson, you know, obviously paying a little bit more for you to take on Vanacek as well, like that would be really interesting for me to bring in two young prospects who are close to the NHL like that. We'll have to see, man. It's every year we talk about this and it never happens, but I think this could be the year that that John Gibson moves on, just because there's that one team that's going to be desperately hunting him, and as long as they want him is the big thing, right? As long as they think he's the option for them.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, yeah, no, 100%. Very curious. Andre Palat, 5 goals, 9 assists.
Yeah, not been great for him either. Their two major additions have not panned out. But despite that, I mean, they've been fine.
The problem is their fucking stupid addition this offseason is paid in buckets. And it's stupid-ass Tyler Toffoli, who's got 15 goals and 35. I hate that guy. I hate him so much, Eddie. I truly cannot stand that dude. And it's so petty and it's so stupid. It's not even just like Jeff Carter, where I'm just like, oh, he seems like a douchebag.
This is just from his time in LA. You just don't like
it. It's 100% from his time in LA. And I just, even when he was in Calgary and he was in Montreal, he felt so overrated to me. Like, because he went what? He went from.
He was LA in Vancouver for a bit.
To Vancouver. Then he went to Montreal and then he went to Calgary. And it's just, ugh, I can't with him. I just can't. And he really is a guy that I should love just by everything about, and I can't do it with him. And his dog, I feel like he's got like a really cute dog named Dodger from his time in LA. And I feel like people like him more because his dog is cute. And I can't, dude.
It's an unbelievable level of pettiness.
It really is, dude. I'm not even mad at his dog. It's just like, oh, your dog is cute, so like you get the like,
yeah,
the like Instagram and Twitter bonuses because like his wife is like really active on social media, like, mm-hmm. you know. And it was like, oh my god, blah blah blah, Toffoli, she's so good. And I was just like, and it's just, I can't stand him because he was on that 70s line. It's just that simple.
Yeah, yeah, I do have PTSD from that 70s line. I did not like them at all.
God, man. Oh, man. Is that the last great nicknamed line we've had?
I think so.
Yeah. It's probably them and then I guess the HBK line, but even that, like, the HBK mm-hmm. line was only cool because their initials were HBK, which was Shawn Michaels. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I think that 70s line is probably the best line nickname we've had in a long time.
Yeah. We haven't really had a line. We haven't even really had any like interesting line combos in a while that have kind of stuck out, right? Like it's a lot of teams have chosen to split up their stars or split up their guys or really haven't seen anything kind of solidify together.
Yeah. Yeah. Interesting. I don't know.
Well, listen, we did it. Got back. We made it back. Despite all the technical issues, we made it back. I am saying this before I've had a chance to even see if the recording
mm-hmm. There's that part which we weren't going to talk about.
I'm being optimistic that if you're listening to this, it worked. If you never hear it, then obviously it didn't. But yeah, listen, it was great to jump on, guys. Again, apologies for the delay. A lot of things going on, a lot of issues on the technical side of things, but
just the life side of stuff too. We both had some stuff going on.
Yeah,
which none of you fucking care about, and that's totally fine. But we apologize. We appreciate all of the support and everything, and we just haven't been able to be as active as we wanted to be. And so we really, really are very grateful for the patience you guys have shown us. So thank you.
Yeah, it's nice to be back. And again, we're gonna try and do this. Start doing this again every week. At the very least, being active on Twitter to let you know if we're going to do one or not. I think at the bare minimum, we can do that. To keep you guys in the loop. But yeah, again, appreciate everything. Happy to be back, and we will talk to you guys soon.
Bye, everybody. We appreciate y'all. Tyler Toffoli sucks.
See you guys.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.